Al, I'm grateful to you, to our council, and of course to the efforts of Ansel Keys that made this new tradition of our council possible. This tradition of the Ansel Keys lecture fits very well the spirit of cardiovascular disease epidemiology. I want to take the remarkable opportunity of this Keys lecture to highlight, mainly for our clinical and bench colleagues, the contributions of cardiovascular disease epidemiology to the scientific method, to critical thinking, and to the evidence that guides preventive practice and policy. I would rather address only these issues, such as the influence of epidemiology on public health, the vigorous state of our art, the decline in cardiovascular disease mortality, the future of research and preventive undertakings in the community, in other words, the things that are somewhat within my knowledge and ken. But I am troubled about the controversy that persists around our mature field, and I'm concerned about some of the threats to its health. I would like us to understand better these issues, and so I will deal with some of the things that I don't really want to talk about. I like to think that if it's not fun, it's not epidemiology. For 40 years, epidemiology has been a productive arm and strategy of cardiovascular investigation. We're coming up soon to the 30th anniversary of this council, and yet we remain number three in influence and funding, if not in importance, behind the other disciplines. Hence, we try harder. Last year, I was happy to introduce the first Keys lecture with a summary of his pioneer contributions to the basic concept that there are population causes as well as individual causes of cardiovascular diseases. With many of you, I was pleased to hear the first Keys lecturer, Jeffrey Rose, elaborate the individual strategies and the population strategies of prevention. Today, I want to extend those concepts to the pervasive influence of these fundamental views of disease, the population and the individual view, on the thinking and activities of cardiovascular disease research, practice, and policy. I'll develop the idea that focus mainly on the individual strategy accounts for most of the controversy, that reconciliation of the two views would remove most of the confusion and conflict about prevention. First, I'd like to borrow from the very modern insights of Charles Dickens in cardiovascular disease epidemiology today, as in Paris and London of the 18th century. Prevention is indeed in the best of times and the worst of times. It's the best of times when we can predict the risk of cardiac events, identify those at high risk, provide clear strategies for reducing that risk, when there's strong, congruent evidence that reducing risk characteristics in high-risk individuals and whole populations reduces disease risk, when the goal of prevention is to identify lower risk among high-risk individuals, but also to lower risk in the entire population. Eventually, the goal is to prevent elevated risk in the first place. It is the best of times nowadays when an informed populace demands preventive services, health information, new products, and there is leadership to respond to the demand. It's the best of times when death rates fall dramatically, indicating the dynamism of cardiovascular processes and providing the greatest impetus to our prevention researches and interventions. It is the best of times when medical and social forces are joined enthusiastically in the control and prevention of high blood pressure and high blood cholesterol, when it's unacceptable for physicians to smoke, and when the cultural climate is evolving toward more healthy behaviors. And it's the best of times when our health agencies, unique health agencies in this country, can establish policies, set goals, monitor progress, and support a broad program of research and preventive activity. But it's also the worst of times. There's a crying need for research and programs in cardiovascular disease prevention among many segments of society, and the need is nowhere near the top of administration priorities. It is the worst of times when medical R&D, one of the remaining areas of national excellence and prestige, is not a major administration priority. It is the worst of times when the accelerated costs of doing research and administering programs are entrapped in a linear NIH budget, and when the proportional increments to heart, lung, and blood, the leader in NIH planning and strategy for prevention, are diminished substantially. It is the worst of times when the long-touted and essential balance of NIH program strategies can be threatened by competition for resources and by a certain elitism about what is exciting in science, when the baroque beauty of biology threatens its lovely counterpart, the classic beauty of epidemiology.